This is Andy Shore from Washington, D.C. with the Pulmonary and Critical Care Literature Update. I'd like to point out an article that was in the June 18th issue of JAMA by Chatterjee and colleagues. These authors looked at the role for thrombolytics in patients with pulmonary embolism. Pulmonary embolism remains a substantial challenge for those of us in pulmonary and critical care medicine, and the question often arises, whom should we consider thrombolytics in? Certainly, in patients who are already in shock, it's something we're considering reaching for if we haven't reached for it already. In patients who are hemodynamically stable, we never really consider it. But there's this intermediate risk group of patients who for some reason progress, and the theory has always been that the progression can be predicted based on evidence of RV dysfunction, which is what's a harbinger of eventual shock in this disease state. What these authors tried to do was bracket the uncertainty around the risk-benefit equation as it relates to the use of thrombolytics in these intermediate risk patients. They took on a meta-analysis, reviewing a number of trials, and identifying eventually 16 that looked at these intermediate risk group of patients and reported issues not only such as mortality, but the risk of bleeding. And specifically, they defined intermediate risk patients as patients who had evidence of RV dysfunction as part of the entry criteria for the trial. Overall, among these 16 studies, they went back as far as 1970 to be included. In addition, the studies included about 2,000 patients overall, about 1,000 randomized to lytics, 1,000 randomized to placebo, and the biggest individual trial was the PTHEO trial, which was just recently published in 2014 in the New England Journal of Medicine. That accounted for half the patients overall in the meta-analysis. In general, the observations these authors found were rather striking. First of all, in a pooled analysis across the 16 trials, the use of thrombolytics in this intermediate risk group of patients was substantial. The risk reduction associated with thrombolytics was something in the range of 50% for mortality. Overall, the number needed to treat to save one life was 59, and that's a very useful number. Similarly, when they looked at intracerebral hemorrhage, the number needed to harm, in terms of how many patients who got lytics developed an intracerebral hemorrhage, is 78. And so it very nicely brackets, in terms of order of magnitude, the trade-off with lytics for these patients with PE between bleeding and death. And it really indicates that thrombolytics are not benign. They did a very important subgroup analysis where they looked at patients who were over 65 as a surrogate marker for high risk of bleeding, and what they saw was that there was substantial bleeding in that population, very different in terms of the risk of bleeding for patients under 65. The benefit in terms of mortality didn't seem to vary very much based on age above or below 65. Similarly, they did a subgroup analysis in the trials that were published more recently with more consistent and objective assessments of RV dysfunction, such as looking at cardiac biomarkers, looking at echocardiography or CT scanning to assess the size of the RV, and in that subpopulation of 8 randomized trials among the whole 16, the treatment effect was fairly consistent. And so overall, with these more recent studies that use more modern assessments of RV dysfunction, the signal seems to be clear in terms of the benefit on mortality. But even in that subpopulation, the signal of harm in terms of the risk for intracerebral hemorrhage was also there. So whether you looked at the entire population of studies or you looked at the more narrow population of more recent, better defined studies, the trade-off is not something that we can ignore. And so again, I think this article is important because it summarizes the literature very clearly and it puts in perspective the trade-offs we in pulmonary critical care have to weigh when we think about patients. It doesn't tell us who's clearly a good candidate and who's clearly not a good candidate. It certainly suggests we should search for RV dysfunction when we meet the patient with pulmonary embolism who looks at all sick in terms of behaving or rather misbehaving in terms of their course of therapy. But we have to weigh the decision about lytics against the mortality benefit and the risk of bleeding. And I think certainly my personal approach will be in anybody who's got some kind of increased risk of bleeding because of age, recent surgery, or any other concern, I'm going to be very cautious. And I'm certainly going to have a conversation with the patient or the patient's family or surrogate decision makers about the trade-offs we're making here in terms of the use of thrombolytics. So again, in JAMA, in the June 18th issue by Chatterjee and colleagues, a very important meta-analysis about lytics and pulmonary embolism. Thank you very much.